Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has extraordinary intelligence and who has, thank God, been bringing it to bear on behalf of the free world is our first guest. He is Daniel Horowitz. These days, he is a columnist for a terrific outlet, The Conservative Review, Mark Levin's platform, among others. His column is entitled The Conservative Conscience, which he certainly is. He's also the author of a best-selling book, Stolen Sovereignty, How to Stop Unelected Judges from Transforming America, a subject we will turn to with him in a moment. Daniel Horowitz, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you back.
Great to be with you to talk some common sense.
A little bit of common sense. I think it's in short supply, as well as the rarefied intelligence that you power yours with. Let me talk to you first about this attack yesterday in New York City, the latest incident of jihadism, and a problem because it is possibly the case that there could be an awful lot more emigres from Bangladesh, or for that matter, elsewhere in the Muslim world, who seek to follow suit. Talk a little bit about the incident yesterday, what we know of it, and in particular, this possible demographic scourge.
Sure. I think it's pretty extraordinary. We've reached a point in our history where there's an attempted botched, I would say, suicide bombing on our shores, and maybe it gets half a day's news cycle. It's not even a big deal anymore, and it's completely out of the news this morning. That's pretty amazing. When I was growing up, this is something that was associated exclusively with the Middle East, and now we have brought that to our shores. And that is really the issue at hand. We have brought it to our shores. This is nothing that came over with an Air Force, a Navy. This is not even about ISIS or Al-Qaeda. This individual, from what has been reported, there was no interaction with the FBI. There were no known contacts with foreign terrorist entities. Certainly, he sympathized with them. The broader problem, and the problem that is much harder to defend against, is that this is a systemic problem in the culture cultivated from these clustered neighborhoods of fervent Sharia-adherent Muslims that we've let in large numbers. And this article you're referencing, I quantified after 9/11, and I list about 47 predominantly Muslim countries and the number of green cards we've issued to nationals of those countries. It's roughly 1.8 million through 2015, so that's probably about 2 million by now. And from a country like Bangladesh, a tremendous amount, 178,000, many of them are in this neighborhood where this jihadist was evidently living in Kensington, Brooklyn. It's called Little Bangladesh. And the problem here is it's much more systemic than, oh, well, maybe we made a mistake and let in one or two people with terrorist proclivities. It's not terrorism. Terrorism is the tactic born out of the broader culture. You wonder who's in that neighborhood, who's the family. And I think last night we found out when his family, through a spokesperson for this Islamic apologist group, put out a statement not, kind of disowning this kid, but saying that the law enforcement treated him in a manner that is unprecedented, and almost like they weren't even apologetic, which tells you we are letting in people to this country that, irrespective of whether they have known terrorism ties, they should never be here.
Yeah. But I did just want to say, Daniel, in your analysis of the 178,466 green cards issued to Bangladeshi nationals from 2001 to 2015, the only countries that we accepted more from were, wait for it, folks, Iran and Pakistan. What could possibly be going wrong? Daniel, let me turn to a related subject. Speaking of Sharia supremacism, we are, of course, seeing outbursts of violence in response to President Trump's announcement that he is going to recognize the reality of Israel's capital being Jerusalem and going to track with that reality by moving our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. You've mused about the dangers of trying to, well, you use the word placate. Another word that comes to mind is appease these Sharia supremacists by submitting, basically. Talk about that danger and how it operates at the moment as we're watching this play out in the Middle East and elsewhere in connection with this embassy decision.
It's amazing when you look at all of the arguments that are posited to oppose Trump's directive moving the embassy. It's all rooted in the fear of the Arab street. The Arabs are going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to riot. And the amazing thing is that is precisely what has gotten us here. It's that 100-year mentality. It's been going on for 100 years. You know, this is the anniversary year of the centennial of the Balfour Declaration, which designated the entirety of the land west of the Jordan River to be a Jewish state.
And initially a good piece of real estate on the eastern side of the Jordan River, as I recall, right?
Exactly. In 1922, I guess it was limited by then to west of the Jordan River, but there was no such thing as creating an Arab entity west of the Jordan River, that's for sure. It never fully took root because the Arabs always rioted. And, you know, we always say violence doesn't pay, but when it came to the Arab street for the last 95 years or so, it did pay. And that's what was so important about Trump being willing to punch right through this and say, you know what, I'm not going to give in to their tantrums. Now, unfortunately, what we're seeing happening today is that I think you're actually seeing the European street riot more than the Arab street in most Arab countries, because most Arab governments, you know, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, they've kind of moved on from this whole PLO issue. They know it's a farce. Whereas a lot of the European governments, really, they have a stronger reaction against Israel than Saudi Arabia and Egypt and some other Arab countries, as well as the people on the streets. And this ties into our first discussion that we've allowed the Arab streets into Western civilization, and they're actually more vocal and virulent against Trump's decision than much of the Arab street in the Arab states.
You know, one of the pieces of this, Daniel, that I'd like to get your thoughts on, our friend Dr. Daniel Pipes has been talking for some time about the need to reposition the whole so-called peace process from the context of this trying to appease the Arab street and, you know, driven by fear of violence, to one that recognizes, again, the reality that Israel defeated the Palestinians, among other Arabs, notably in 1967 when it took control of all of this real estate, and that the way this should work now is on the basis of that, you know, sort of dictation of terms rather than this endless effort to induce the Palestinians to be reasonable. What are your thoughts about that and how that might fit into what Donald Trump has started with his embassy decision?
Sure, what Daniel Pipes is talking about and really what the president's decision hopefully is leading to is the original policy adopted by the U.S. government in 1922. It was a resolution that passed unanimously in Congress and signed by President Warren Harding. You look at the congressional debate back then, and it was fascinating, just fascinating material, that all the members of Congress recognized one principle here, that it was kind of a diverse area. It was no man's land. It was governed by the Ottoman Turks before World War I. You had a continuous Jewish presence. You had some random smattering of Arabs, but certainly no cohesive, quote unquote, Palestinian nation there. And they understood that it was only the Jews that would have the ability to govern it and recognize everyone's civil and religious liberty rights and protect all the holy sites, whereas the Arabs wouldn't. And they were proven right over time that with the Arabs, it's always living by the sword. It's always the threat of violence. And that's the thing. We're always working around their threats of violence. What needs to happen is what they said should happen. And I quote from his Congressman Walter Chandler from New York and on the House floor. He said, you know, the Jews need to control the entire area, and they can and will presumably respect everyone's civil rights. If the Arabs won't cooperate, they should be forced to sell their land. If they decline to do that, they should be removed, unfortunately, that's what it's come to, because it's either that or the annihilation of anyone who doesn't submit to Sharia.
Amen. Daniel Horowitz, extraordinarily important thoughts and insights into the challenges that we're facing both abroad and here. Thank you so much for your time today and for the great work that you do at Conservative Review, Daniel, and elsewhere. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, Daniel Greenfield joins us. We'll talk about, Little Bangladesh, among other instances of Sharia on the march, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.